Welcome everyone to Game Chat. Happy 2019. It's now a new year, a new us. Not a new Game Chat, but we have new games this year. So that's cool. This week we were talking about Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice. Yes, that's it. Yeah. Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice. So we're talking about it was released in August of 2017. So it is about a year and a half old. We're just now getting around to it. I'm really excited to talk about this game with you guys. We'll start out with introductions. So starting up at the top of our little list with Franco, we will start with him. And so say your name as well as the game that you're looking forward to playing in 2019. It can be an older game or it can be a game that's going to be released this year. So have at it.
All right, this is Franco, and based on some previews, I'm looking forward to, and hopefully it won't be a bust, is The Outer Worlds.
This is Jonathan, and if it comes out in 2019, it's still kind of not sure, but in the Valley of Gods, the new Campo Santo game, the developers who made Firewatch, That's supposed to come out this year, so I'm really hyped for that. So,
my name's Kevin. Since I'm the second Kevin here, you can just call me Kevin 2. One game that I'm really looking forward to playing this year is The Legend of Zelda: Wind Waker, because I've never had a chance to play it before.
Ooh, it's my first Zelda.
My favorite visually, certainly.
Hi, I'm Madeline, and a game I'm looking forward to, which will hopefully release this year, is called Breathe Edge. It's a space sim with a sense of humor.
This is Mason, and I'm looking forward to playing Dragon Age for the first time this year.
Very nice.
This is Kevin. And this year I'm looking forward to hopefully playing Ooblets if it doesn't get delayed.
And this is Austin, and I am looking forward to playing Cyberpunk 2077. So
my name is Steph. Sorry about the audio issues for anyone listening. The game I'm looking for, I didn't hear anyone's games. Oh, well. The game I'm looking forward to playing in 2018. Gosh, there's a lot. You know what I'm looking forward to doing is there's a lot of games that I want to play in 2018 that have to be released. And that also we have like here that we're doing for Game Chat, but one thing I'm really looking forward to is something we're doing here with Game Chat is going through all of the Dragon Age games. That's actually what I'm looking forward to this year. So, yeah. Anyways, so welcome again. As I said, we're talking about Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice. A little intro to the game with those listening, a little kind of summary. It's a game inspired by Norse mythology and Celtic culture. Hellblade follows Senua, a picked warrior who must make her way to Helheim by defeating otherworldly entities and facing their challenges in order to rescue the soul of her dead lover from the goddess Hela. In parallel, the game acts as a metaphor for the character's struggle with psychosis. A Senua who suffers from the condition but believes it to be a curse is haunted by an entity known as the darkness, voices in her head known as furies and memories from her past. So fun stuff. Since usually I would probably talk about this towards the end, but I have a feeling that it will come up anyways. So this game, obviously, I mean, it's in the summary of it, but it's kind of covers Senua's psychosis, her mental illness. How do you guys feel about so far that we've played up until this halfway stopping point? How do you guys feel that it's doing so far with that? I know it's a heavy question to start out with, but here it is.
I feel like it's doing a good job of letting you not be sure what is real and what is not. At least in the world for Senua.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, if you put it that way, yeah, because, I mean, obviously when you play games, you know, you're not sure the world that you're playing in. So it could be demons. You don't, you know, I know it's in reality probably psychosis, but it's, you know, presented, you know, I mean, obviously we're playing phantoms and stuff like that. I mean, fighting phantoms. So it's presented pretty good, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really like the kind of shadowy and illusion-y visuals.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I think that makes it really cool. I mean, because you're fighting something that looks solid, but yet it kind of forms out of the air. So yeah. A neat look to it that keeps you wondering in that same vein.
Yeah, for sure. Kevin, too, you were saying something?
I think they did a really good job with showing how her psychotic symptoms, for lack of a better words, mm-hmm. have a relationship to each other.
Yeah.
A lot of people who suffer with psychosis will have multiple entities that they hear things from, mm-hmm. or multiple voices that they hear, and they all kind of interact inside the person's head. And mm-hmm. I've really appreciated how you can hear some of the voices that Sinu is hearing talking back and forth with each other, or at least commenting on each other's reactions to the world around them.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I'm experiencing this game necessarily the way I'm supposed to. I treated the Furies just more as like slightly annoying narrators and like assistants to tell me when something is behind me. I mean, mm-hmm. like they say some interesting things sometimes, but I'm just sort of like, I don't know. Like, I forget, has Game Chat played the Beginner's Guide yet?
No, it's on our okay. docket for this year.
Got it. But like the narrator in that game, just like that's sort of how I'm treating the narrator in this game. Okay, so it's sort of a narrative that's breaking the fourth wall with me. And that's just like sort of the way that I've treated that. And like, I get that it's, I understand that it's, from what I know, from the research that they've done and everything like that, a fairly accurate depiction of like how people experience psychosis and things like that. But because I am so far removed from ever experiencing anything like that, I think it's hard for me to sort of get into it from that perspective. So,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they did a lot. They did do very, like, I linked some articles here in Discord, but like they did some extensive research as a team. I said it was a development team of 20 people, but they did some extensive research into it, especially the director. The director, but there's also someone else that was in charge of that. But yeah, in fact, the person in the article that was on the development team was saying that like he just worked day in, you know, like they really tried their best to represent it in various aspects of the game and worked hard. But there are also there have also been some pushback or some like conflicting opinion articles from people who have various degrees of mental illness who say that it felt like that it was using their mental illness. Using it in a way because like the article that I linked before, the writer was basically saying that, you know, that she had mental illness and that the game originally was written not to be about mental illness, but was written just to be about Senua's journey into the darkness to find her fiance, I think, or her beloved, we'll just say her beloved, to about her journey into the darkness to find him. And they added, or Corinthus writer, I didn't see any, like, the I didn't read anything specifically myself about the developers talking about this, but that they had added the mental illness later. And she felt that that was kind of like, oh, well, you're just using it as a story point or as a way to tell the story. Which, in my opinion, I don't really see that. But then again, I don't have any, like, recorded mental illness. But, like, I don't see it as a way of using it. I see it as a way of just, I mean, it is using it, but not using it in, like, a negative way, I guess.
Yeah, I find it interesting because, I mean, like I was, I am not familiar with any kind of psychosis or mental illness. Like, I'm so far removed from just that world and
yeah
stuff. But I did read that article on it, and I can see where, like, the issues arise. But at the same time, I think the fact that, like, you know, it's like the first credit in the game that you see when they do the opening credits is for the consultants, for, like, the site, the illness consultants and the psychiatrists and stuff, you know, like, they make it very clear, like, that when they, like, even if they did decide to tack on the mental illness aspect later on, it's like, they didn't just do it willy nilly. It's like, they were like, they went hard. Like, we're gonna, so I think one of the articles, if it might be the same article, you, like, she said, like, that what she saw is, like, it was like they wanted to get it right rather than it to be, like, real.
Yeah.
And it's like, I can understand that, but it's like at the same time, like, if this is the first game like this that I know of that, like, that it's had the public talking about mental illness and how games can be used as something more than just the quote unquote mindless entertainment of video games, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I think it's like, could it be better? I don't know. I mean, it probably could in terms of describing mental illness and stuff, but I feel like as far as, like, a way of, like, opening the door to talk about this to, like, you know, for other developers, like, something she did, she mentioned how, like, when she went in, it's like, how it's like, this is a game about sanity and everything. And it's like the first one that's not set in, like, a sanatorium or Lovecraftian or there's not a sanity meter, you know. It's like, it's like, no, this is just a story. This is, it's like, you're thrown in, like, because it's like you hear what she's hearing, how her mind's working, and so I find it very interesting, and I feel like it's a good stepping point, because I mean, this game, like, looks amazing. And it's like, it's crazy to me to think that only 20 people worked on this game.
Yeah.
And it's like, it kind of, like, throws everything when people complain about, like, oh, the budget's not big enough. It's like, this team proved that a small team can do an amazing piece of art in a video game, you know? So.
Yeah. Yeah. The in one of the articles that about the developers, they did talk about that they did work probably a little bit harder than what they should have in order to create it with a 20 person team, because I know, like, one of the guys that was part of the interview was saying that, like, he hardly got any sleep, that he himself, I think, had to start seeing, like, a therapist, and, like, he was just pushing himself way too hard on it. And a few other things, like, cause I read a couple of other, like, I think it was the comments on the article that I listed that people were saying, oh, well, it doesn't show like, yes, it's about a woman with mental illness, but it doesn't show her, like, dealing with people. She's by herself out in the wilderness, like, doing this thing by herself. Like, that's not how people with mental illness have to do. But it's like, well, that's kind of what, you know, they were arguing that it should have showed her, like, interacting with people. But it's like, that's not the story. The story is her treading out and, you know, treading into the darkness to do this, to have her journey. So, yeah. So, and, like, one of the questions that we got kind of brought up an interesting part, like as you, like the two gates that we go through, and I said, we'll go into like details in a little bit, but just going along with the mental illness, as you fight, I mean, as you go through those two gates, you fight the quote unquote gods, Surtur. I'm going to butcher these names, Surtur and Valraven. And so these two are supposed to be gods, but Senua is able to defeat them. I mean, we defeat them as players, you know, fighting through her. But I mean, as for gods, like they were a little bit more difficult than the other creatures, but they weren't incredibly difficult. Like you would think they would have been a little bit more impossible. Do you think that this worked in as a facet to her mental health? Or into the darkness that she was kind of seeking?
Nah, I think it's just programming.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just because it is kind of like still early in the game. Like, I don't know if it's, I guess we're at halfway now, but like considering like there's not that many combat moments in the whole game, it's like, it's like, you play the game and then it's very obvious when it's like, okay, it's combat time. Get your sword out.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it's like, you can't even do any combat like on your own. Like,
yeah.
Until the game lets you. So I think it's more of just like, they couldn't be too super different. They couldn't like throw new mechanics at you, you know, for the most part, just because that's not like the, I mean, I don't want to say it's not the focus of the game, because they obviously spend a lot of time into developing this combat system, but like the emphasis is on the story, not so much the combat. So
true. How did you guys? I mean, if anyone else has anything else to say about that, please go ahead. But how did you guys feel about the fighting in the game? The combat mechanics.
The fighting in general was interesting. It was a little bit annoying with the switching of targets. It took me a little while to figure out the I'm not sure if you could do that even at the start, or if you can only do that once you got it later, the iron mirror mechanic, where you can essentially pause time in a way.
Oh, wow. I don't even know anything about that. Sure.
That was when you could push the E button.
Or, it's when they tell you to focus.
Oh, when they tell you to focus. Yeah, I never figured that out.
Yeah, it's during combat. You notice on like the... they end up having like a little rune symbol pop up.
Yeah.
It slows down time, and like it's kind of like an unseen meter. It's like if you dodge effectively or block, you'll build it up, and then you can slow down time, and it makes like getting on hits on the bigger guys easier.
Yeah.
But yeah. You can see it on her strapped to her belt.
It kind of lights up a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely saw it there. I just didn't. I mean, there's no, and that's something else that, you know, we can talk about, but there's no tutorial or any kind of explanation to fighting. It's just kind of like, here, do what you do.
You go look at the controls.
Yeah, that's what happened to me, is like when the game started, like I hit the pause button because something's going on, and then it's really convenient that just like on the pause menu, it has the controls listed on the side. And so since I heard about the combat of this game before I played it, I'm like, let me look at this list.
Yeah.
And look, okay.
Yeah.
And that helped me. But for me, I played on Xbox, and just like little things of like the B button was a melee attack. And like, I, for some reason, intuitively, I was like, I kept wanting that button to be block, and block is like a shoulder button.
Yeah.
So like that messed with me, just because like in my mind, that's not where the buttons should be placed. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Are you?
But then again, I didn't check to see if there was like a button mapping thing. I didn't care that much. I just adapted, but that was one of the things that I noticed for me.
On the PlayStation, yeah, you can't change the mapping, so it's probably the same for you too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did anybody just real quick, out of curiosity, two quick questions. How many people played with headphones?
Yes. I played with noise canceling headphones, and it terrified me.
Yeah, really enhances the effect. And I started with the flame, I forget.
Whoever Surtur.
So, yeah, because going back to the point about the mirror on her hip, if you play the shadow god or whatever, the illusion god first, her companion, whoever that guy is, I forget his name, sorry.
Druth.
Sort of explains what's going on with the mirror. So it's like, what? Mm-hmm. They have a thing where no matter which way you went, he would have explained the mirror to her, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Then also at the end of the Surtur part, it's like Druth is like saying like goodbyes, it sounds like. Because I started Surtur first too, and then did Valraven second. And it's like you could tell that like even though they let you choose which one you wanted to do first, to me it was clear that you're supposed to do Valraven first. Cause that was more about Senua and getting over her things. And then learning about the mirror. Whereas in Surtur, it's just like they screamed focus and I just happened to hit the focus button, you know?
And
that's how I learned to do it.
Yeah. Oh, and then Valraven, they also explained the one thing. Periodelia, seeing faces in rocks.
I noticed that too. Cause I saw when you enter Surtur, where it's like you see a face in the waterfall. Yeah. And I was like, what is this? It's really easy to pass. And I noticed it's like if you on the like you can't go back to it once you beat Surtur and you pass the waterfall.
After I beat the second god and she told me the deal about the whoever it is told you about the deal and the faces and the stone. Then let me see if I can backtrack. And I backtracked to the other area. Okay. And I think it's just her mother again. I thought maybe it was going to be her father, but it's just her mother again.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if you'd be able to go and look at it again. I know it disappeared after I had.
After you look at it.
Yes.
The waterfall.
Yeah. Does anyone else have anything to say about the fighting or about the psychosis, mental illness handling?
This is about the ordering. I watched a playthrough. I haven't played it. Sorry, I didn't have time. Mm-hmm. But whenever Druth is telling you about the two doors to go through, he says Surtur first and then Valraven second. And so I'm wondering if that like even subconsciously like prompts people to pick that one first.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of sounds like it.
Yeah. I picked Surtur first. Cause by the time I got to that point, I was already, this game makes me feel uneasy. I'll go into it when we talk about the audio later, but I was like, let me just get
Barb's dream is to this, open up.
I was like, let me just get this scariest one out first. And in my mind, I'm like, Surtur's the fire god. I'm like, he's going to be scarier. And then today when I do the second part, I'm like, oh gosh, what is this skull raven meant? No, I should. It's like, Surtur was so much easier, so much better. Give me fire.
Did you feel like one of them was easier to beat than the other? Because the playthrough that I watched, Valraven looked a lot harder.
Valraven was a lot annoying.
I'm so glad that they did not, during the middle of the Valraven fight, have you end up having the rot grow on your arm every time you failed.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would have taken so much longer to beat. Because I died like at least 5 or 6 times right when I had gotten really close to the end. Because it's like, oh, get up! And he goes and slams on top.
the rot thing, well, you can discuss it later, but the rot thing added to my stress. Like, I was stressed out about this game anyways, but it added to my stress. And so, like, as soon as, like, I heard about the rot and they introduced it, like, I was like, I don't know if this is real or not. I don't care. I'm setting combat to easy. I'm not even playing this. Like, I'm not dealing with that. So
yeah, I think,
luckily I haven't died yet.
Yeah, we noticed that really early on with the rot. It looks more like when you die and the rot goes up your arm, it seems like it actually only goes, it only increases one time per area. Because I know I definitely died a whole bunch trying to go to Surtur. And every time it showed that rot going up, it was like, you know what? It's not going up any higher than the last time. So at least there's that from what I could tell.
Right.
And just from a firsthand point of view, gangrene doesn't look like that. That looks a little bit, what she gets looks a little bit more like being burnt, but
yeah.
Okay. Gangrene would be really hard to render.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It being burnt makes a lot more sense though, considering the
darkness and the fire and what she's and dealing with.
Yeah. And like some of the stuff with
did they specifically say about. It was gangrene?
They said it rot, and rot is and like gangrene is like your body living, rotting, rubbing off. I mean, it's technically a specific infection, but it's
in my head. I was thinking
it's you're dead.
I know what gangrene is. I just
because that part of you is dead.
I thought, I don't know. In my head, when they said rot, I was thinking like a metaphorical rot, and it was just darkness crawling up her arm. I guess I wasn't thinking of it literally.
I'm sure that's what they're going for, but I can't unplug my nurse brain sometimes.
Nor would I want you to.
So how did you guys feel about kind of going along with how they portrayed mental illness with Senua? How did you guys feel about the voices, the binaural, how do you say that? Binaural?
Binaural.
Anyways, it's audio that's recorded to make it sound like it's coming from all. So like when you're using the headphones, for those listening, as you're playing the game, Senua hears these voices who are part of the darkness, but part of also, I think they call them the Furies, is what that little thing said that I read. So you hear these voices throughout the game as you're doing things. You hear them laughing at you. You hear them like talking amongst themselves, like, "Will she figure it out?" And, "Oh, she's not going to figure it out. You're so stupid. Why are you so stupid?" And so it kind of, you know, and that's part of like the that's part of the research that they did, and the people that they talked to who had psychosis and who did hear these voices. How did you guys feel about the audio? Did it heighten the effect for you, or did it just kind of give you the heebie-jeebies, or kind of, or even trigger you?
For me, I think I had to watch a police show because I had to get to New York and didn't have time to play. Mm-hmm. But at first, I thought it was a pretty interesting kind of mechanic, and as I was playing it, I was playing it through my speakers, and then I remembered, it's like, oh, I should have plugged my headphones in. So I did that. And then I think the more disturbing thing for me was when the voices started to talk to you.
Yes. Yeah.
But I mean, still, it's like, I thought that it, at least from what I've watched so far, I think it was pretty well executed.
Yeah, no, I think it was pretty perfect because it's definitely very creepy, and the detail of how they move all those voices around, and it really sounds like it's coming from multiple different points in space. And then with the different voices and the different tones, you know, saying, you know, you're not going to make it, turn back, or, you know, you're weak, you know, or, you know, you're almost there. You know, the different voices really give just a crazy amount of, I don't know, just a mental feedback that definitely not normal, you know. So it's a lot to try to you know, in a sense, I got used to it to where I could kind of listen to a few, especially when you're fighting and you do hear someone go evade. It's like, oh, that's kind of a hint.
Yeah.
But then the rest of it's just, you know, trying to be distracting noise at the same time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it really made it a lot richer to have all of that going at the same time. And then figuring out when Snow is talking, you know, it's like everyone thought like, oh, wait, no, that's her voice.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was perfect.
Or even distinguishing, of course, Druth is a male voice, but still it felt at certain points like you had to almost distinguish his voice from the rest, even though just because there were so many going on. And then I think then eventually like you start hearing like other voices too for certain parts, for specific parts of the game. But yeah.
For me, I hated it, but I hated it because it was so good.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't like ASMR. It makes my skin crawl. And so, like, the moment I booted this up and I had my noise canceling headphones on, I was just like, oh, I don't like this. And then, like, as soon as the first narrator, like, she starts talking as a whisper in like your left ear, and like that just like makes me like crank my neck up and like kind of cringe and throughout the entire game I can only play this game in short bursts because like the audio just like it stresses me out. It raises my anxiety like I've never felt before, and like I just like my body like aches, like I feel exhausted after like playing just a little bit of this game, and it's like I hate that, but at the same time I'm like I feel like that's the point, you know? It's like, considering like I've never had any experience with mental illness or people with mental illness, like just to think of like how exhausting just this a game, or I'm sitting down in my comfy chair playing with headphones in like a well lit room, you know, it's like, and you know, I was playing the Val Raven part today, and there's a part where it's like he lures you with his singing, and it's like such a different voice than the one you've been hearing, and it like made me jump, and I'm like, nope, I don't like this, I don't like it at all, but it was during all that I came to love finding the little lore bits where Druth was, because the moment I saw one of those bits, I'm like, oh, I can drown out the other voices and just listen to Druth talk about Norse mythology. And then the moment I had that epiphany, I was like, that's almost like Senua's reaction too, is when she focuses on Druth and thinks about what Druth's saying, it's like that's like the happiest she seems in the rest of it. Cause it's, and like, I found that like, oh my God, wow, that's really powerful.
Yeah.
At least it was for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Druth is a very interesting character. Go ahead. Kevin too. Did you have something to say?
Voices are actually something I really appreciated about this game because I've worked with individuals with psychosis before, but it's really different hearing them describe what they experience and actually being able to experience some facet of it. But I think this game got a lot of things right. And Jonathan, something you just said really struck a chord. When you mentioned enjoying those parts where you heard Druth talking about the lore, because it just drowned everything else out for a second. That's something that I saw with some of the individuals that I worked with a lot, is that the ones who had auditory hallucinations would really latch on to things that would drown out those voices for a little while. I think that the game, I'm sure they didn't get everything right, but I think that what they did is really kind of a beautiful thing in letting people who haven't ever struggled with this kind of mental illness understand at least a part of what that's like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think the sound overall was just really well done too. I mean,
oh god, yeah.
The opening canoe scene was great, and and even what the fire god when the fire, you know, when you hit the sacrifice temples or whatever, the stones and the fire would erupt. The sound of the fire was like all enveloping, and it was like added to the atmosphere.
Yeah,
or even in the Valraven section, just like there was like a couple moments where it's like the voices weren't talking or something, but like a crow would caw. And I remember there was one time I was like, whoa, where, like, it made me like look around in real life because it caught me off guard.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you guys, go ahead, Kevin.
Did anybody else have trouble hearing like Valraven's song or like the call of like the screams or whatever?
Because Valraven, did you focus?
Were you supposed to focus to hear a song?
You'd be able to hear the music and the singing in kind of like a background, and it wasn't really specific. But if you focused, then it would, the stereo effect would be really clear, and you could move left and right, and you could pinpoint very specifically what direction you were supposed to go.
They didn't make that very clear.
You know, an interesting thing that just kind of hit me was that, you know, because my first response to that, Kevin, was like, oh, they didn't tell you about, like, they didn't tell you what to do. They didn't make it clear. But then also, like, that, just thinking about it, like, it kind of plays into possibly the whole, like, it could be in itself kind of a gameplay mechanic in helping you to experience this, you know, maybe the sort of confusion or the sort of like just like not knowing what to do that Senua might feel in certain situations. I'm not sure. I haven't read that was like intended, but it is kind of strange that they were just kind of like, we're not going to give you any indication of what to do other than just like the voices that you're hearing. You know, no tutorial or no like, hey, it hit A or hit B to do this, you know, hit this to evade. And so that could have been something that they were, you know, that they had considered. Because I know that they dropped in a few other things that were there just to make you feel either anxious like Senua would, or either to kind of heighten that confusion and not knowing what to do.
Yeah.
What I noticed was that some of the, you know, I don't know how, what you call it, directions were hidden in the voices. You know, like listening to the song for Valraven, it's early on when you get to it, but like right after he starts to bounce around, you do hear one of the voices mention focus to hear the voice. But it's layered with the other voices. So if you're in that mode where you're kind of trying to not listen to the crazy voices, you can miss some directions too.
Sure, sure. Really
subtle and easy to miss because it's just part of that whole layered audio thing. But I like that. And I think that you're right in the way that without having any kind of real directions or introduction and just being placed into it, that makes sense, you know? How else would someone deal with this? You are kind of stuck and you have to figure it out.
And yeah.
Guesses.
Yeah. I think it was the amount of voices was crazy. And I don't know if, did everyone play with subtitles? Like I generally always like turn on subtitles nowadays for games.
Looking for them, but I couldn't find them personally. That was obviously a user problem.
Yeah, you might have to. You can only do it like from the start menu. I don't know, but
okay.
I turned on the subtitles, and what's interesting is the subtitles don't help with the voices because only like one line of the voices will show up as subtitles and not when you hear them. So it's like, so because like most of the voices aren't subtitled, and then like it would give you a subtitle for one of them, and then I would try to be like listening for that one subtitle, and it would but it would come later, and it would throw me off, and it didn't like I'm glad they I mean I mean, I know it was like is probably more of like a physical thing because it's like if they were put subtitles for all the voices speaking at once, that'd be the entire screen. So,
yeah.
But I felt like it still added to it. Like it didn't take away from the experience by having subtitles on, because not all these voices are subtitled.
Oh, sure.
So
sure. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah. Oh, and also with the subtitles, they ended up. They do. Some of the subtitles would give like the general sentence of what they said, but not exactly what they said. Because some of the sentences, they ended up having them formed by like five different furies, like the main one, as well as like all the like other voices. And so they see it in like a certain way. But then they give you like a sentence of like in general what they said all together.
yeah so did you guys speaking of like the gates and the puzzles that were in those two areas, did you guys find the puzzles intuitive, or were there any that really stumped you or that you think just didn't work very well?
I really liked them.
Mm-hmm.
I got stuck on the first Valraven lineup puzzle.
Yeah.
Because I just wasn't exactly sure what do. The one where you actually have to like line up the symbol of the door. Like it kept kind of trying to go around backwards, and I eventually looked online and saw a guy fiddling around with the archway thing, and then I didn't see him actually go through it, but then I went through that. And I'm like, oh. Yeah. Now there's a little side door open.
Yeah.
I thought the Valraven ones were they were a little bit frustrating just because when you went through an archway, like sometimes like unless you were looking, it's like what changed in the world wasn't always apparent. Mm-hmm. But then like the thing about it was like if you accidentally went back through that archway, it'd go away.
Right.
You know,
there's and a reset switch.
So there was a couple times where I was like, wait, did I miss it? And then I reset it, and then I'd be like, oh wait, no, but at the same time I felt like just the voices, even though it frustrated me, like it added to the experience. Like I felt like it was part of the game. It wasn't just me being an idiot. Even though it could have just been that.
No.
Go
ahead, Kev.
Valraven was basically the only one so far that I needed to look up exactly where some of the rune stones were. Because I'm like, Because a few of them, you had to like go through specific archways and put doors,
reset an area.
And put walls back and stuff to actually get the to be able to get to the dang runes.
I must confess, I will. I'm following a guide for just for the stones, not for the game, but just for the stones, because I was saying to Steph, I don't want to go through this game and miss one stone. I'm going to be like infuriated.
You're an achievement person, Frank. Me, I'm like, I don't care if I miss one. It's fine.
This game, like I've already said numerous times, this game stresses me out. So it's like short burst, get through it to the check mark. And then I'm like, save it for tomorrow. So it's like.
Yeah. Even though, like, you know, we were talking earlier about the two gates and how it seems like
you know, that maybe since it gives more backstory on Senua, that maybe you should do the Valraven one first before the, I'm just going to say the fire one. Do the illusion one before the fire one. I did the Firegate first, and I kind of liked that because, like, the puzzles in there were a lot easier for the most part than the ones in the Illusion Gate in the Valraven area. But I did enjoy the puzzles in the Valraven area, even though that they were sometimes, like, the whole... Like, there were a couple of times where I was getting really... Or one part in particular, I was getting really frustrated with the whole thing where you would see... I think it was the god that you end up fighting, or maybe it was something else, that you would see them through the gate, and you had to go through a certain gate to change things, to change, like, to make, like, you know, the wall disappear, a part of the wall disappear. There was one part where, like, I didn't know what door, or I think it was the very beginning of that, I didn't know where to go, but I just wasn't going through the right door, because there were all kinds of different door frames. So, I mean... I don't think I had to look up any hints for them, but it did. It came very, very close. Very close.
Oh, for Valraven?
Yeah. For the illusion, for the gates that you had to go through. Maybe was that in the fire one? That might have been the fire one. Okay.
Surtur, you just had to go and burn down the gates.
I
ended up failing a few times in that. Not just from combat, but one time I actually ended up... I think it was the one right before the boss, possibly. It was the one where you had, like, the multiple houses, but you had to go and bounce across a roof, and you actually have to balance, and they don't really tell you that. And then pausing the game to look at something, and when I went back in, I ended up falling off. I'm like, really? Really?
Yeah, that was one of those things. I kind of got, like, just the way I play games, like, as soon as I went in that area, before I went to do my thing, I'm like, I'm going to explore this little area, because that's just what I do in these kinds of games. Cause, like,
yeah.
And so I was just walking around, and I was on that balancing thing, and then that's when I realized, like, oh, this is a gameplay thing. Like, you actually have to balance, and then I'm glad I did, like, walk around that whole house just because before I did that, because then when the fire started, I was like, oh, I know where it's telling me to go now.
Yeah.
You know, because it's so it so I got lucky on that one. So Surtur wasn't an issue for me as much as Valraven was. So
now, I did the same thing. I wandered around and looked at everything ahead of time, and it did the same thing, so that once, you know, fire kicked in and you're in a big rush, it's like, okay, I'm familiar. And Kevin, if you ever on a bounce beam and you stop to pull out your phone, I expect you to fall.
What? So I had to pause the game, I think, to look up something.
it just seems an odd place to break, to pause.
You know, I mean, if you're in the middle of a balance beam, sometimes you just gotta take a break. You just gotta sometimes take a load off, text. And you just gotta look around, take in the scenery. It's fine. It's fine. You know. So the lore stones, or rune stones, whatever you want to call them. How did you guys? Did you guys? Well, we mentioned earlier that it seemed like it gave a nice little break from all the voices in Senua's head. Did you find the lore and the mythos that it was? Because for those listening, you would find these lore stones throughout the game, and it would give you some mythos, some facts, you know, some mythology. Did you guys find that interesting or helpful, or Other than a nice break, I mean, did you find what it was telling you? Because to me, like, I thought it was interesting, but then also I was kind of like, I wish this had something to do with the story or with Sinua's journey than just feeding me Norse mythology.
Yeah, the first ones at the beginning, I kind of paid attention to, but towards the like latter ones, you know, where he's just talking, I did kind of like zone out because like that was like my break, you know, like my mental, like I was like, okay, I'm gonna relax, let's listen to Druth, you know, only one voice speak, but then also just because, you know, not too long ago I played the new God of War, and that has Norse mythology, and it made me want to look it up. And so I've been reading Neil Gaiman's Norse mythology book, which is just Neil Gaiman just writing all the myths in one comprehensive book, kind of like Edith Hamilton's mythology, if you guys ever had to read that in high school. So like I've had the Norse mythology stuff like in my head already.
Yeah.
So it's like some of these stories, like they're told differently. Anytime a mythological story is told, it's told differently. But I was like, I'm good if I don't catch all this, you know?
I think at first it was like I was riveted to the narration, but as you get encounter more, you're sort of like, okay. And for the sake of time, it might have helped if you had maybe a little animation with each, you know, because you're sort of getting all these things thrown at you and you can't really, you know, just through voice, you can't really relate sometimes to it. So,
yeah.
But I had to hand it to Odin. He is one bad, tears out his eye, and one of his lore stones tears out his eye to trade it for something else. And I'm like, holy crap, this guy's.
That's surprising.
He hangs himself for 9 days.
Yeah, was hashtag committed.
Something.
That's how I discovered writing.
something I thought was interesting about Druth, I couldn't tell if Druth was animated or if it was like live action footage.
To me, it seemed like, because I was looking at it for a bit, and even because I don't even have my graphics turned all the way up, just because of my laptop computer. So even at like lowish graphics, like it still looked. So I'm pretty sure that it's a that it was live action imposed onto it, which looked amazing.
Yeah, I mean that's what like I thought was really smart, because like even like on my Xbox One X, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
4K HDR kind of thing. It's like when she imagines Druth there, like he's never fully in focus.
Yeah.
Like he's always slightly out of focus. Yeah. And so that like it obscures it enough that like it like fits in, and you're like, and then of course Senua's motion capture is so good. Mm-hmm. So it's like they did this nice trick of the mind thing. Like it makes me think of like why the original Jurassic Park looks so good, because they just melded the animatronics and the CGI so well together that it tricks your brain into not like you're not like immediately this is fake or this is really just like, whoa, you're caught in between and it seems real.
Which, fun fact, that was the actress's first time acting. She was like an intern or something, or like a dev there at the studio.
She was a video editor who she stood in because they needed someone to like just be the person on the camera so they could set it up.
Mm-hmm.
And she just did just good enough to like, hey, let's not hire an actress, let's have her do it.
And amazing.
then she won Best Performance at the Game Awards.
And
she was handed an award by Andy Serkis.
Yep.
And it's like I loved. But like I didn't know anything about this game really until that moment. But like seeing her like just like so happy to meet, like Andy Serkis gave her an award for her first performance.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, and she's a video editor. I I'm a video editor, so I'm a little biased. So,
but I was just like, future, Jonathan.
You never know.
I was like, dreams can happen. Not that I'd ever want to actually motion capture perform, but still.
Jonathan, we're gonna stick a bunch of little dots to your face.
So here's the reveal of tonight's podcast: is that Jonathan secretly wants to be a picked
mocha
warrior goddess. Yeah. Okay. All right.
My motion capture would look like Mass Effect Andromeda.
Oh, that's terrible.
That's how well my performance would probably look like.
That's terrible.
Does anyone else have anything to say about the lore stones?
I liked them. But it made sense narratively to me because Senua is not a Northman, a North person.
Yeah.
She doesn't, this isn't anything she knows about. The only reason she knows about is because she found Druth, who had escaped from the Northmen.
Yeah.
And he had to learn all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it made sense that he would have to she would have to actively remember the stuff that he told her to help her through this journey. So, but some of them seem to be more actively relevant than others, certainly.
Yeah.
I thought they were pretty key. Because you don't get anything. I mean, when you just start playing the game, you get a little tiny bit of, the voices and stuff. But in order to really kind of have a sense of the importance and, some motivation, not all of it was super relevant, but it was all really well told.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was
broken up in sections and in pieces made it really, really fun to be able to, it made it worthwhile searching out.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know each, little bit that there was. And I thought that was great. I think that the amount of information it gave you per stone was right,
Yeah. I do like the way that they, putting aside the lore stone. I did like how they weaved information, even with the voices throughout the game, with Druth talking to you and with the main fury speaking, and how they slowly revealed how Senua got to where you're playing her, started her journey, and how Druth slowly revealed his history to you, or reminded you of it, because I do like at this, it seems to me that they gave you that information at just the right moments there. But does anyone else have anything? We're kind of at the end of our talking points and in time. Does anyone else have anything they want to discuss that we didn't get a chance to so far?
I would say that going back to that sense of having a hint of what living with the psychosis and multiple voices in your head, we've been playing for, an hour or two trying to focus through voices, especially the ones saying, you can't do it, go back, turn around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, grief. I can't imagine living with that for real life.
Yeah.
So, having a hint of that, and I do know at least one person that I think really deals with that stuff on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm.
So it does kind of give a hint to what they might really be dealing with. And that's not something I could have imagined on my own.
Yeah.
I like that. And I imagine somebody who actually as this would probably do sometimes is at certain points she would end up like the voices are taunting her or keep saying things, and then she tells them to shut up.
Yeah.
And they quiet down for maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
Because during the giant one right before the whole reveal of the boss, or right before the whole boss room of Valraven, I managed to line up everything before doing the final frame thing that ended up going and eliminating like half of the symbols.
Yeah.
And like the after that, like the like a bunch of them are like, Valverine's playing a trick. It's like, no, mm-hmm. Shut up. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
Just real quick, I was just gonna say, did anybody else think that I think on the fireside, the guy with the shield before the boss was like almost a boss? It's like,
oh yeah, the shield guys are terrible. I hate them.
Yeah. You basically just have to wail on them until your charge builds up.
Yeah, that's what the kick I think is for.
Oh, okay.
Oh yeah, kicking is wonderful. It's wonderful. A lot of evading and kicking in my gameplay. It's great.
Okay, I'll have to incorporate that.
I mean,
that's gonna be Stink's quote for the game.
Yeah. It's a lot of evading and kicking is key. It's key. Anyone else?
I won't lie, I didn't realize that melee attacks were a thing until about 5 minutes before I hit our stopping point when I paused the game and saw that button. I'll have to go try that.
That must have led to a lot of dying.
I mean, I just evaded and looked like an idiot, but it worked.
I kept forgetting about it because if I didn't forget about it, I'd accidentally press it because in my head on Xbox, it's the B button. And I'm like, B is the block. Nope. She's punching air and getting hit. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, guys, for the chat, for discussing the first part of Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice with me. Next week, we are, which I think is the 15th. Yes. So next week on the 15th, on Tuesday, as usual, same time. Same bat channel. We were talking about the last half of Hellblade's newest sacrifice and the game as a whole, as well as giving our final thoughts and scoring it for our scorecard. There is also, and like if you haven't checked out the articles that I posted in the Discord, I highly suggest to check them out or to check out your own articles about it because there's a lot of stuff behind this game. And also there's a little making a feature that's on the menu of the game. I think it comes with the game on any system, but if it's not there, you can probably find it on YouTube. I'll be watching that, so there might be something from that I might discuss, bring up next week. So if you have time to watch it, I don't know how long it is. I doubt it's too extremely long. I saved it for this one because it said that there would be spoilers in it, so I would wait until after you beat the game to watch it, if you can, if you want to. Yeah, so, and then, see, the following week after that, on January the 22nd, we'll be talking about 1979 Revolution Black Friday, which is on PS4, Xbox One, Switch, PC, Mac, Android, and iOS. Our month chat, which is on January the 29th, is Ken Follett's Pillars of the Earth, PS4, PC, Mac, and Xbone. And then we're also doing game upon game. We're also doing the Dragon Age series this entire year. So on Thursday, March the 15th, we'll be talking about Dragon Age Origins. So you have until then to play Dragon Age Origins as well as the DLC Awakening and any other DLCs beside that. You can play or you don't have to play. Just Awakening is the one that's kind of crucial, I think. Yeah, and so throughout the year, we'll be playing Origins, and then 2, and then Inquisition to prepare for the new Dragon Age that we'll hopefully be gifted with soon. So you guys have a great week. And for those listening, you can find us on Google, Stitcher, iTunes. You can visit us at thegamechat.net. We're also on Twitter at @the_game_chat. Check us out. We have all of our past recordings there. We record every week, pretty much. And we also chat online as well as on the Discord channel. So Peace out, guys. I'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.
Craig, you may leave.